So all you have to say is this is Shane Bugby with Art Drop Radio.
I sort of wish I had Google Glasses sometimes. I'm like, man, I wish I got that photo.
Yeah.
I wish I could have gone back 15 seconds. I wish everything was recorded so I can... But then I don't, of course.
Sure. But yeah, she...
We're talking about service animals.
Yeah, so Ruby manages my blood glucose. And so normally the way they do that is they have a pinprick thing they tap you with. And they tap you every hour. And then it tells you when you're basically... going to pass out because it can cause brain damage.
Do you have diabetes?
No, I have the opposite problem where my glucose drops.
What's that called?
It's hypoglycemia.
Hypoglycemia, that's it.
Yeah, and so, but the thing is that the machine is actually a pretty shitty system because it can only tell you if you're already low, whereas the dog can smell it before it happens.
Isn't that fucking wild, man?
So it can prevent the problem from ever happening. And the dog is with you all the time.
So are you a pro-science person? Do you take aspirin? You know, like, some people are like, that's whack job stuff. You just have to go to science and that's it.
Right.
And I'm in the border of every... like, I'm with that, I think. I take aspirin.
Right.
So I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not good with being a guinea pig.
Right.
And I also believe that animals can sniff out something in your ankle... Or
it's your sweat, it's your cells. They smell, and they smell the change in your cell.
I always figure we're less of an animal than the rest of them. Yeah. Well, that's why we're so brutal.
And it's
so confused and angry and stuff. We've escaped from this. We're confused. Like, that is pure and perfect.
Right.
We're talking about Ruby the dog.
Right. She has a clear reward system. She gets, you know, all of her stuff. She does her job. She gets rewarded. And she has less stress because her environment is very predictable and consistent. And so, yeah, that's the other part where I didn't really know nothing about dogs before they prescribed her. And then I was like, it's amazing because she's definitely like in the 10% of intelligence. It was like, she's a medical alert dog, technically. You know, like that's the more specific kind of service dog. And they just need to know that you want that information from them. You know, but
like
it's
the drug sniffing dogs or what have you.
Yeah, but it's like the discipline is the harder part. So like Ruby has to go to the grocery store and ignore all the food and like has to ignore like badly behaved adults that want to play with her and things like that when she's working in public, you know. And like most dogs can't do that because they're on a short con and Ruby's on a really long con.
What is that? Con?
Like, she's, you know, she's like...
Conscience?
She's... No. Like, she's like, you know, rather than robbing the bank...
Oh, con job.
Yeah. She's convincing. Getting a job at the bank and spending years to, like, clean out the whole safe. And that's, like, how she looks at it, you know? She's like, okay, I need to invest because that's really, like, the payoff is not to betray you and walk away. The payoff is to, like, stick with you because this is good, you know?
Go ahead.
And so, yeah, we had a good... I mean, I learned so much. Ruby's actually going to get a book next year, so that'll be exciting, too.
That's awesome. Is Ruby writing it?
Yeah, she her trainer is going to help her.
Right on.
And then she has an illustrator that she hired.
I got to interrupt real quick, because I just say, so we're Joe Microcosm Publishing. I don't even like doing this stuff when we're doing the podcast. I just like talking, but...
Yeah.
I want to say, like, I'm a little nervous... I'm sitting here. I drove a car here, and I'm drinking out of a plastic cup. I'm like,
me too.
I'm desperate. Oh, good. But yours is probably like heavy duty Portland fucking something soy. Recently, you know, I just like I said. I'm like, oh god, I needed a drink of coffee or something. And I'm on meds. I shouldn't even have coffee. You know, so I'm like, but I'm feeling a little tired. I can do the podcast. I got to be alert. I'm like, but I'm going to meet Joe from Microcosm Publishing with a plastic cup. This is really on twisted. And then the podcast is about, this is supposed to be about art and underground art and street art and what is art. And then, you know, my biggest fascination with you right now is Asperger's.
Uh-huh.
And because I've been told, like recently, I had a friend diagnosed with Asperger's.
Oh, yeah?
And she says, you know, Shane... I think you might have, my counselor even thinks you might have a touch of this.
Oh.
We talk about this. Me, you, and Jeff get together, and we could talk and go for hours. And everyone looks at us like we're strange.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's like, that's one of the things they tell me about, that she told her about.
Right.
How we feel so strange. So I was like, wow. And then Amy saw your story. My wife, Amy, had read your story. And she goes, before you tipped on the Asperger stuff even. But I don't know. But she was like... this guy's story sounds exactly like yours. And I go, what part of it? What do you mean? She goes, Like, he gets the money and just spends it, and they took the company away from him.
Right.
Something like that, because that's how it was with me. Like, I'm like a... Oh. So there's all these similarities. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And it's one of those... Do you know about Theory of Mind? Or, I mean, Theory of Mind is one part of it.
No.
That's actually not what I... Oh.
I don't know about that.
I'm sorry. Executive function is actually where I'm going with that. Executive function is, like, when you... And so that's part, like, so Asperger's is part of autism spectrum, which is right. a developmental disability, and they've kind of bundled it all together. It's basically just autism now. And so that's, like, a change in the last 2 or 3 years, even, that kind of was sprung. And that's controversial enough, but it totally makes sense to me, because I'm, you know, and also it's just, like, I don't care. I'm, you know, I have what I have. I am what I am. But, so all that is a developmental disability, you know, meaning that, like, emotionally, I'm probably 12 years old, you know, like, or I have the emotional developmental equivalency of a 12-year-old, like, in middle age, you know.
How old are you?
I'm 40.
Right on.
You know, and so that's what it is, you know.
Do you have a college education?
No.
Okay.
Not in high school either.
Me neither.
But they let
I think that these are all the things that Amy had seen. That
yeah.
She's like, yeah, I couldn't, and that's what my friend was telling me, that's the Asperger's, maybe.
Yeah.
You're not able... Right. But you have an extreme intelligence, and you study, and you're always reading about these specific things. And
right, and you're smart, but it's...
I know a lot about these few things. Right. The rest of it, I have no clue.
But so there's, like, a few key aspects to the disability side, which is, like, as opposed to, like, an intellectual disability, which, you know, like we're a very smart people, but we have a lot of developmental disability problems. Like, and one of the bigger ones is executive function, which is, like... You know, when you're making decisions, you can't understand that your life is the summation and consequence of all those decisions. So it's like, you know, you end up in a position where you're, like, trusting your friends and, like, working with people, and then all of a sudden it's like you've lost your, like, life's work, you know, or you're...
I do.
Right, yeah.
I do. I know that exactly. Have you ever seen... There's a book called from Judy, and I forget her name. She's a best-selling author. Judy Piccolo... I forget her name, but she did this... book called House Rules,
uh-huh.
and it's about an Asperger's kid.
Oh, I don't know it.
And it's a bestseller, like this.
Oh, wow.
This lady's a best-selling author. But in the first page of the book has my name, and she has this whole paragraph about me.
Oh, wow.
Like this, the character in the book bought a book from me, Shane uh-huh. Bugbee, the serial.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, she's saying I'm, when I first got the book, she called me fucking retard.
Right. Well,
excuse the language, you know, I'm sorry. I'm a brute person, and I'm ignorant, and I conform to the... To the language that is not going to upset people. But I'm just saying, like, this is what's going on in my head.
Right, sure.
I don't want to be late, you know, like, you think of the worst kind of things.
Right.
From your childhood. So I'm like,
sure.
Oh, my God.
Right, but, like, you relive the bullying and that, yeah.
Yeah, but as I look through into this whole, the Asperger's thing or the autistic spectrum, when I first heard that, I told someone, and someone was laughing at me. Like, they said, ha-ha. Like, they had, like, it was, like, funny to them. I'm like, there's not really anything funny about this necessarily.
Right.
And, like, well, and I think it was one of my wife's friends said, well, you wouldn't want to tell people that. And I'm like, I don't have a problem being very transparent about everything. I said, but I think the idea of this whole thing, she goes, well, that's, they were arguing about the spectrum issue. And I said, but, she goes, I wouldn't want to be called that. And I go, but isn't this I guess I see the spectrum thing as the conversation as a way to let people know we don't all think the same.
Right.
It's a good, whether I have anything or not.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. This is a concept of, I don't think like you.
Right.
And I can't relate to what you're dealing, you know, like, I can't even relate with what's going on in this society, most of it.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And that's Theory of Mind, you know, where you're
that's
like,
the Theory of Mind.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, where you're like, it's hard to relate with other people's lived experiences or like, you don't, like, I've come to understand now as a middle-aged person that when most people are around someone else that is having intense feelings, they take on those feelings, and I don't have that at all. You know, that's like a part of your brain that is either weak or just dead in me, you know? So I literally, you know, so it's like if everyone around me is like angry, I don't pick up on that, you know? But with time, I have learned to, like, pick up on the signs and the expressions of that.
So if you were around other Asperger's folks, though, and one of them was angry, would you pick up on that?
That, yeah, before my reprogramming, I don't know.
Oh, reprogramming? What is this? What is the whole Asperger show? It's not about art. So this is great.
So, I mean, and it's controversial, too, because it's so, you know, it like, kind of creates this idea that we're wrong, you know, which I don't really agree with. But it was more like, so, you know, it was more like I came to the point where I was like, I either need to live on a desert island, you know, metaphorically, proverbially, or I need to, like, learn how to integrate with other people, you know? And so I chose to understand other people. And so it's basically like...
Right.
You get a cognitive retraining of, like, signs to pick up on, and you get skills, and, you know, it's just simple things like don't, you know, like, it's different when you're being interviewed or whatever, but, like, you know, for the most part, like, don't talk for more than two sentences sequentially. It's, like, a good rule because...
Oh, like I just did.
Right, yeah. You're like, you know, it's too easy to get run away with something you're excited about, right?
Oh, I do it all the time.
Exactly.
I could really use that training because I cannot reach the next level in anything because right. I can't communicate. I see it, I'm like, and oh, it just happened to X-Ray FM.
Oh, yeah?
I went in there to drop off flyers and I said, listen, I'm having a hard time getting through with you guys. You guys aren't promoting this stuff and you provide a service to the community.
Right.
I have information. I'm asking you to report it to someone who might want to hear about it. This hip-hop... I'm bringing Bushwick Bill from the Ghetto Boys in town.
Oh,
so,
cool.
Yeah, so I'm like, please promote this. And the lady said something. I'm like, nah, I've done that. You guys aren't doing your job. I said something like this, and I left. And the morning guy ran out, and he said, they thought you were mad at them. I'm like, I'm not mad at them. He's like, you're just doing it. And anyway, it worked out, but I keep scaring people.
Right, right.
And I don't mean to.
Right, and so that's another part of it is like, without that understanding of how other people interpret emotions, it's like our emotional expression is often misinterpreted.
Yeah.
You know, because we don't express our emotions in the same way. So it's like when I'm really anxious or upset, like I look remarkably calm. You know?
Now, this is what I was saying. In general, that's how I am when you just said that. Except I've noticed the few people I'm starting to... Like my friend that's been diagnosed.
Uh-huh.
And her, the other friend of hers that we all three get along... When they get excited, I get excited.
Right.
And this other kid in town that I do the podcast with, I feel like he has Asperger's. I keep telling Scam, the street artist.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I keep telling Scam, I think you might have this. They're telling me this. But when he gets excited, I get excited.
Right.
And we really feed off each other. We both get each other excited. Mm-hmm. But in general, around other people, I'm pretty chill.
Right, right, yeah. But that's, you know, so you can, like, you enjoy his energy or whatever. You enjoy feeding off of, like, his excitement. You know, that's... And, like, you're able to pick up on it.
Yeah. You know, I don't enjoy it.
Or, like, me, oh, you don't like it.
I don't enjoy it.
Oh, interesting.
Sometimes I do, but sometimes I can't, like, he calls, I'm like, Scam, you know I love you.
Right. Okay.
But sometimes I'll call him, like, I can't answer that phone call. He's going to take me off track. It's going to offer this jagged feeling to me. And I don't want to feel jagged right now.
Right. Oh, because you will take it on, though, right, no matter
what. Yeah, his anxiety. He's full of... you could probably see it in Scam's artwork. Anxiety. Right.
Never noticed.
I have a lot of... You know, so it's like I got to be cautious about talking with Scam. That's it.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, that's cool. And then, you know, what you're doing and you make your choices and that's part of it. It's like adulthood for anybody.
This should be a recording for Joe's therapy couch.
Mm-hmm. Right, I know. Now. So that was the funny thing is, so like you were saying, so I mentor six young people with autism, like teens and 20s, wow. And, you know, people that like are young enough to be my children, but I have no children.
That's
so
cool.
Don't like that. And so, so it's, you know, it's like in those ways I get to kind of relive those memories and experiences, like the better ones, not some of the bad ones too, but whatever. That's life.
That's cool.
But then I met with one woman this past weekend. Who I was in San Francisco, and we had never met before, and she's almost my age, but like lives with her parents, and you know, it's like those are always the moments when they're like, my parents told me not to tell anybody that I have autism, and I was like, come on, everybody notices. It's not like,
yeah,
you know, it's not like they're stupid. You know, it's
that,
like,
older generation is really out of touch at this point.
Yeah, and that was the thing, and she's like, they told me not to tell my boyfriend, and I was like, your boyfriend knows.
They told you to lie.
They may not, that's not the, like, he may not have the word for it or whatever, but he knows.
Yeah,
you know, he's
exactly.
Like, you know, he's picking up on it. He knows your mannerisms, he knows what's, like, how you, you know. And that kind of thing where I was just like, right, that's still the idea about it. Is it's like, because I'm like, you know, and that was kind of the other thing for me too, where I was just like, how come like, you know, I mean, I guess it's like that crossroads thing where you're like, you could go around everybody thinking you're an asshole, or you could go around and be like, this is what's going on with me, this is why I am how I am, this is what it's like for me. And then that was kind of the thing I never really expected or thought about too much, because it's like, one of the big criteria for diagnosis is like clinical strength egocentricity, which is also pretty funny. But I never even thought about it, but I started getting like two pieces of fan mail a week for, you know, the past 2 years, you know? So it's like hundreds of people are like, I totally relate to this. And that was the part where I was like, did not expect that.
Oh, so the Asperger's took off for you as a thing.
Because there's just no adult, interesting, like, you know, there's just like, it's thought of still as a thing for children. It's thought of, you know, and like all the organizations and prescriptive stuff are for clinicians, teachers, parents, or children. And so there's just nothing, like, we're basically supposed to like live in the closet or die.
Oh, yeah. You know? And we end up in all these, God damn it. Joe, I want to talk to you about this all day long. I'm so interested in Asperger's, but as publishers,
yes.
As I'm an old school publisher. Like, so I'm 49, going on 50 this year.
Congratulations, well done.
Thank you. I didn't think I'd live this long, but I published obscene books. Mm-hmm. I published like Mike Diana, Jim Goad. You know, mm-hmm. I published all of these when they were put into the courts. I'm like, I'll publish them
because
I believe in this total. Now this is the Shane of 30 years ago.
Okay? Sure.
I believe in total free speech does not matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
All. So present day, there's a the younger generation, as I see, mm-hmm. seems to almost be trying to redefine what free speech is. Or there's a great philosophical debate on free speech, what this is. And to me, as a person who has spoke the word free thought movement for 30 years.
Sure.
Now that it's on the news, it's upset, you know, it's a buzzword. But I say this repetitively on this podcast, but of course you understand free speech, free thought, and all of this. How do you stand on free? Do you think there's too much free speech?
No.
And we're talking art.
Right.
Not political free speech. Like,
yeah, I get you. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, I think, and this has been actually the best thing about doing the mentorship thing, is that, like, I meet and I talk to young people and I hear their perspectives. And I think for them, it's, like, the wounds are a lot fresher and more, just because they're more recent, you know? So, like, the words have a lot more power. But I don't, you know, I don't know if it's, like, an age thing. I mean, I have really thick skin, too. So it's, like, it's really hard to bother me, you know, in that way. And, like something could bother me, like, strategically, you know, if somebody is just, like, making a storm and like destroying something that I care about, like that bothers me, but that's not really free speech.
But that's action.
Yeah.
Speech
yeah.
that calls action to me goes away from fucking hurt them. That goes away from free speech to me. That's
sure.
a call to action.
Sure.
And a direction. And I don't.
Yeah.
I'm talking about just the idea that I can be the person I want to be and I can say what I want without consequence.
Sure.
And that's an odd thing for people to hear. You know, I think I should be able to say what I want without consequence.
Right.
And people are like, well, you can't expect that at the local bar. And I'm like, right, I can't, but I think we can evolve to that point.
Right.
We shouldn't
right.
be brutarians because I said whatever came out of my mouth. I just don't go for the punching because violence is a cycle.
Right.
I'm born of violence. Like, I come from that world.
Sure, sure.
And so I'm probably this typical case of been very violent, you know, come from violence to it makes me physically ill.
Sure, right. There's, like, something there in
your
brain.
I'm like
a
pacifist. I told my wife, I don't know if I can even...
Right.
I can do it anymore. Like, I used to be able to fight back, but I'm like, I don't think I can.
Right, you get to a point where that's not what you're after. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know where I'm going now, because I'm thinking about all that bullshit, but...
but so...
With the free speech as well, the artwork and stuff like that.
So it's, like, where I grew up in Cleveland, it was, like,
Midwest, yeah.
I'd go to the bar, and, like, people use the N-word pretty freely.
Oh, yeah.
The city is it's, like, 51% black, at least it was then. It's probably more or less the same now. And so that was pretty weird, though, in hindsight, mostly. Like, at the time, it seemed totally normal, you know, that people would do that. And so, you know, and it's, like... I feel like even in those cases, I'm like, well, that person's exposing their colors and telling you how they feel about things. And, like, they don't really have a right to claim that word over its, you know, implications, but they're like being frank and putting that out there, and then you can choose whether or not you interface with this person, you know? And, you know, and I guess it's like, I'm a bit older now, and so one of the things that I'm doing now, so it's like, I'm a retarded person. Like, I'm retarded.
Right.
You know, like, medically, you know, in a denotative use of the word, you know? And you wouldn't believe how many clinicians or social workers or whatever gristle and bristle and get really uncomfortable when I refer to myself that way. And I'm like, no, I'm taking this word because I suffered under this word, so I own the right to use this word. And, like, the reason you feel uncomfortable is because of that, because you did not suffer under this word, you know?
It's funny. I used to work at a place called Ray Graham's Home for Retarded Adults. And uh-huh. That's what it said on the check.
Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So I had never, you know, that was the word.
Yeah.
No, it's and morphed, so, and that's fine with me.
And that was the funniest part. So it's like, I had no idea that that was like, you know, maybe this is a matter of being developmentally disabled. But I was telling a story on Facebook one day about people constantly come up to me and like tell me that my backpack is unzipped, and they can see something in me that tells them that, like, I am retarded, you know? And so people are constantly stopping me on the street and being like, you really shouldn't be out by yourself.
You know?
Oh, yeah, constantly. And it's, like, to a cartoonish degree. And so I tell the best stories. And then in this one case, I was walking in D.C., and this woman comes up, and she's like, this is not really a safe place for you. Like, you might want to go inside. And I was like, I'm fine, I know what I'm doing, and I'm going to meet my friend. And she was like, well, oh, I'm sorry, I thought you were a retarded person. And I was like, well, you know, and I thought this was just so strange for a stranger to come up and talk to me like that. And then I was retelling the story later on Facebook, and several people said, I can't believe that you would use that word. And I was like, well, I'm quoting somebody else.
Right.
And then I thought, and that was kind of the formative motion for me, where I was like, wait a minute, I am retarded, and these people that aren't retarded are telling me that I don't have the right to use, like, the word that has caused so much suffering for me and people like me, that, like, that's not how that works, you know? It's like, it's the same way that every word has been reclaimed for every minority of any kind, you know, that really helps me, you know, because it's like critical thinking is kind of my thing, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, I've watched so many awesome...
Oh, get the fuck out of here. I'm sorry, Joe.
We've been interrupted.
I totally know that dude.
Are you clowning around our interview?
Oh, God, I love this. Awesome.
Hey, mister.
Good to see you, man. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good to
You're
see
the guy
you.
With the hair and the shirt. Yeah, I don't remember you. Hey, I remember him
mm-hmm.
from the moving pictures.
Oh.
How's it going?
You have a moving pictures history.
Yeah. This is great. Wow. Dingo and Olive. A visit from Dingo and Olive. That's wonderful.
And you move into photograph position. Excellent.
Yeah.
It's like you've done this before. Yeah. Several times per day, I imagine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bike
How are you?
Around.
I'm going to take a break.
Stop are you enjoying the...
Our Drop Radio.
So, we left off there when Olive and Dingo visited. Well, hell, I forget what we were talking about. Oh, we were talking about words and the use of words in free speech, and if there's too much free speech. And you'd brought up the R word, a retard, and you mm-hmm. spoke about how you're going to use it because you are retarded, uh-huh. or, you know. And it's funny, like, man, when I look back on my old blog posts, like, I remember when the Kramer dude from Seinfeld got in trouble for using the N word.
Right.
On the stage. And I have this blog where I defend him.
Oh, interesting.
And I defend the use of words.
Uh-huh.
And this is not, you know, like, I don't know what I say in the blog. I'm not going to try to requote
yourself.
How long ago, but I definitely defend the use of it. And I think somewhere in there I'm like, I'll never not use words when I want to. Present day, I say the N-word.
Right.
Now,
right.
10 years ago, I would have said the actual N-word right,
right
now.
Right, right.
But I just can't, I feel like I can't add to the scales of unjust or whatever, like you It's just try to be as just as you can.
Right. And I mean, I guess I see it, like I say, it's like if you suffered under that word, like you then own the right to that word. And then it's
like fat ass.
Sure. Sure. There you go.
You're right.
You probably had that one lobbed at you in the most derogatory.
Absolutely. So when I say, if I say that fat ass, I make a joke. I'm like, if I call someone fat in traffic, they definitely have to be fatter than me. Mm, or they're just like pudgy.
But here's the thing, is like you can make that like a loving, non-pejorative kind of word, you know?
Yeah, I try not to use name-calling negatives anymore. I'm talking about the younger self.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
we're talking about free speech, and that's different. The name-calling isn't, right. You know, I guess you could say that would fall under some sort of free speech, but it's not in the art world.
Right, sure,
I'm talking about more of art and expression and people like that. And then, so let's get on to like, well, I would talk about what is art, but in a lot of, like, so I've been doing this for, like, this concept for 10 years now, researching, like, what is art, trying to understand this. And I guess when I think about this podcast that I'm doing, it's come down to a class issue. Like, when I look at street art,
yeah,
and I look at underground art and what that was. Let me put my windshield on this.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
So,
we don't just in
ruin
case.
The recording. Forget what I'm saying now. Getting a bit manic, but we're talking about free speech. I don't know what the fuck I was just saying now.
Like, the what is art?
Yeah, the street art is a class thing to me. I'm interested in street art. I'm an underground artist. Like I published Mike Diana, stuff like that. So I come from an underground. So when I got with Scam, I'm like, what's the difference between street art and underground art? We're trying to figure this out. Because street art, when I was young,
right.
was all of it. It was heavy metal. It was punk rock. It was hip hop. It was graffiti.
Right.
It was everything.
Sure.
It was just underground. It was not able to get above ground.
Right.
And so now it's a whole different thing.
Right. I guess, yeah, I can see that. I don't, you know, I feel like it's like, if you need to express yourself, then express yourself. I guess I feel like most of my life has been about playing pranks, you know, if we're looking at it with a lens, you know. And so I happen to, you'll love this. There's a guy that has the exact same name as me, and he used to live in Portland, and he taught, like, fine art, and he still makes fine art. He lives in L.A. now. He's a professional. You know, when we know each other, we're buddies. He's a great guy, but we came up with this idea that we would like sort of trade places, and I had this elaborate idea that like I would screw together a pile of pallets and then like refinish all the wood and make it, you know, but it was kind of like me like kind of making fun of gallery art or like fine art, you know, and it doesn't, you know, and I guess there's like a statement there or whatever, but my statement was more like fine art is stupid and like sure. here's something that like, you know, you wouldn't ever actually see in a gallery other than like there's been people that think like I do before me and, you know, and that kind of thing. But if not, you know, and so, but then, you know, the prank is apparently that like if I pretend to be him, I can sell a piece of garbage for, you know, five figures.
Sure. See, so that's my critique on the whole art thing. Well, it's a long one too, probably. So I'm going to try to shorten this up. Art starts with the brute. It starts with the base, the brute
yeah.
art, the ignorant. The person who has a hard time communicating, the distraught, the person who's been raped and cannot verbalize it. So they start making artwork. They first have to understand it themselves, and then they have something to express to other people when they show it.
Yeah.
So making artwork is a very personal experience, and showing it is a very generous one. I know a lot of artists who have gone through the therapeutic art. Let's say we've been victimized, whatever, and then they just burn it. They don't have any interest in showing it. But I see, like, gallery art and stuff like that is all money, all people from art schools, all people that have money. They are able to communicate. It's all the gallery owner. It's people that look like the gallery owner. Or
sure.
it's people that are savage. And
right.
they're presented in this way. It's not modern. It's not like, like, when I see European museums, I'll see black metal in there.
Sure.
I'll see stuff like that. And I'm like, why isn't black metal in here? Why isn't death metal? Why isn't hip-hop in the museums here?
Right.
Why isn't our art?
Right,
or
right.
the artwork of 30 years ago, if you were listening to it, the black metal and death metal, maybe you would have caught on to the problems we're having today in our society had you listened
sure.
to the angry artwork of 30 years ago.
Sure.
And said we want to burn it all down.
Right, right. And then, yeah, people
and now,
were serious. Yeah.
So I think artwork is very serious to me. I take it very serious. I put my whole life into it. And I've absolutely put myself into peril. because of the expressions and the people I publish and stuff like that.
Sure.
So I really don't. I don't think it's too cool where everyone calls themselves artists.
Right.
I don't think it's real cool where everyone says everything's art. You can see artwork in a fucking leaf. I don't think it's cool.
Right.
I don't think everything's art. I think art's a real important, special thing. I think artwork has been proven to be able to move people.
Sure.
Hitler loved artwork.
Right. Oh, did he? Yeah.
And he understood the importance of imagery and stuff like that. So I just think, like, when, I don't know, I think there's an importance to art, and I feel like I'm sort of ripped off. And when I say I, me, mm-hmm. like, I don't mean me personally. Like, when I do artwork, it's for someone else. Or it's for all the people like me that have been picked on, or, you know, whatever I'm expressing.
Yeah.
The culture, the zip code I come from, it's important that I'm speaking for them. That's why I want to show it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know.
Right.
That's how I see artwork. And when I came to Portland and saw the street art here, I was like, wow, this is so different than the street art I grew up with.
Yeah.
And then I started going, what was the difference? I'm like, oh, the street art, when I grew up in Chicago, it was a communication. It was a form of survival, too. You had to be able to read what was on that wall there
right.
to survive that neighborhood.
Right, right, yeah.
And so it was
right.
people, underground people, communicating to each other.
Mm-hmm. And it's still that here. I mean,
What I see here, I don't see a lot of that. I see in the street art stuff, and I love a lot of these artists. Like, when I saw Scam 3-4 years ago, I'm like, wow, it makes me feel safe. Someone here's like me.
Right.
So when I saw that, it made me feel safe. But when I walk around some of the very uppity neighborhoods in Portland, I notice there's a lot of street art here. What the street art here says communicates to me, like, street art, for my generations, is the voice of struggle.
Right.
It's a voice of struggle. Here, yeah. most of it looks like the voice of consumption.
Sure.
It's
there's
like
a bit of that, yeah.
A lot of very, very rich kids putting up stickers. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot, I know what it costs as a publisher to do that.
Right.
I know.
Right.
Wow, mm-hmm. you've got some coin, man. And before, like, street art to me and underground art was illegal. And
right.
it was either illegal, like, you went and stole the spray paints.
Right.
Or you put out obscene books that were like, man, this is going to hurt someone's feelings, or it's going to shock someone. And then.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I joke, because, you know, I go everywhere with my service dog. And so I'll put up a tag, and then the dog will pee. And I joke that it's like the one thing we have most in common. You know, and then, and so it's, and whenever I'm complaining that she's taking too long, like, you know, my date will be like, well, now you're making the dog wait for you while you do that, you know, and so I feel like it's like something, you know, it's something, and there was, do you know Dog Piss? It was like one of the most prolific taggers of all time. He just wrote Dog Piss relentlessly everywhere on everything.
Is he a Portland one?
No.
Or just a...
Yeah, he's just like canon. You know, but that's the thing, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like the kind of guy everybody hates, but he's doing exactly what you're saying. Like, he's expressing himself. He has one joke, and he's going to take it to the ends of the earth.
I love that.
Is not based around consumption or anything other than, like, fuck you, you know, and
yeah.
he'll write it on top of anybody else.
But I guess when I say that, when I say things are based on consumption, and that's what I see in the artwork here, I guess that's what we are here.
Yeah.
We consume. So I guess it's just another, that is artwork to me, is documenting what's going on in your world around you, whether you like it or not. And I really have an issue with some of the only, I can't really strike out against a street artist here because they're so generous.
Right.
They give it for free.
Right.
So it's hard for me to, you know, when I go in a gallery, museum, I can definitely strike out against things and go, this is awful, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is funny because it's like, I'll put up microcosm stickers sometimes, never on illegal places because that would be illegal. But when I go by again, it'll be like all the other stickers will be there, and the microcosm one will be peeled off, and I'm like, "Wait, am I the man? Am I the consumerist? You know?" And I'm sure there's people that see it that way.
Really?
Because it's
hilarious.
Well, you know, but I mean, I feel they're good. I feel they're tasteful. I feel they're good.
What, your stickers?
Yeah. I mean, but it's also one of the. But then, so I have other ones too, where I'll do sometimes. Like, one is just like my face lighting something on fire, you know, but, you know, so it's like not about, I guess it means something if you know what it is and the story and all that, but it's like for most people it's not about selling anything.
I don't understand the sticker politics. Scam tries to explain to me, like, you're gonna get capped, this is, you know, the
mm-hmm.
I'm like, what the fuck, and I'm watching, like, the graffiti guys spray painted the wall. Right. So we got to take the wall again. That was the guys doing the poster. Yeah. And it's I'm like, it's funny, but it's like, if this is what war is right now, if we can keep war to this, I'm beautiful. It's beautiful because it feels like a civil war.
Saving
lives. We've got to take the hill again. Call scam.
He's got the cans. Yeah.
So it's just a wild scene when I see this. It's different than when I grew up, and that's fun to see. So part of, I guess, the podcast is I'm sussing out is it's me when I do these things. It's about learning.
Yeah,
I did podcasts and I've done interviews for 30 years now,
mm-hmm.
and that's how I got my education.
Right. Okay.
I would go out and interview people.
Right. And then like, they tell you their story and
yeah,
so you can pick up what you like and ignore what you don't like. And,
yeah, it's the weirdest thing. I interviewed Tad from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very suicidal and depressed then, but I didn't realize it. But
right.
I went and interviewed him and I asked him a lot of these questions. And then when I listened to the interview, I'm like, and I edited the video down. It was all about suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed it to Amy. She goes, holy shit, that's great. That's dark. When did this happen?
Right.
I didn't even catch this in the interview. The interview is mostly about all this other stuff. I'm like, I guess this is what I was looking for when I went to see him because his album was real dark. Anyway.
Yeah, I've had that too where I'm like, I learn what happened in the interview when I watch it or listen to it later, and then I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah, so I guess the Asperger's thing has really attracted me. A lot of things attracted me to talking to you.
Right.
But the artwork was... I feel like I can trust you, Joe.
Oh, cool.
That's it, just because of the books you've put out. Mm-hmm. You've published my wife.
Oh, yeah?
In the chocolate cookbook.
Oh, she's nice. The vanilla. Oh, right, Bugbee. Right. Yeah, I should have known.
Yeah, yeah.
And you even told me her name was Amy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So that's...
Yeah, and then... Yeah, I...
Beautiful.
I don't know that I interacted with her, but yeah, they did. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I trust you, so I felt like talking. I want to talk to you about Portland art.
Uh-huh.
Beyond the Asperger's thing is my personal thing,
right.
but the art thing that I'm really trying to suss out here, like I don't know if Portland's past the, you know, like gentrification. I've always been on the other end of it. I get moved out of areas.
Sure.
And so, like when I see the Portland Street Art Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
They pop up and I wanted to interview them, and then it went awry, and so in part of the, you know, like we're going through emails and like, yes, no, let me see a list of your questions, and I'm like,
oh,
when that happens usually it's a person who has something to hide.
Yeah
So you know this as
okay. Oh yeah, I interview people all the time, and whenever they're like, these are the three questions that are off the table, and normally they're telling you something that you're like, oh, I didn't know. Why do you care so much about that? Let me Google it and find out why this is such a sensitive thing.
Yeah. Normally, like, I walk in, when I interview, I should have did this with you, too, is like I say, if there's anything we shouldn't talk about, you should tell me now.
Right.
I know this is weird to say, but I'm not going to, if it records, it can get out there. I can edit it.
Right,
but it's
right.
digital, so please let me know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that murder's off the table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no murder. No talking
don't talk
of mine
about
past
the murder.
Murders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway.
No, I mean, it's better. I mean, I feel it's better if you talk about it because it's like, you know, there's something. It's like nothing's worse than. Because, you know, you can kind of tell when, you know, it's people just haven't worked through their shit or whatever, you know?
It was a genuine thing. It was a request for an interview when I did this. And so it all started to get weird, and that's where it took. See, these fucking things always make me enemies because I get in these interview things. I'm like, this is beautiful. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, hey, what was that? And I chase this thread.
Yeah.
And the next thing I know, I found something rotten in Denmark like a journalist.
Right.
And it starts unraveling. Everyone's like, why'd you unravel? I'm like, I didn't mean to. It's just,
right.
He answered the question that way.
You opened the door.
He's the one that said it. I just asked questions.
Yeah.
And so that's why I feel like I'm onto here now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But when they did that, it just made me look into them more and look at this in a different way.
Sure.
And then it right away brought up the gentrification issue. And I'm like, oh, I see. You're college educated. You're looking to attach yourself to a popular art trend.
Sure.
So you use the word street art. And you're looking to get a career in the nonprofits. And so, but you're, I would like to say from my angle, you're appropriating a culture for me.
Sure.
Appropriating an underground brute culture where we have no access to galleries, no access to schools, no access to art supplies. That's street art and underground art to me. And when you use those names, you know, and you don't, you're catering to tourists, you're catering to sell tickets, you're catering to gentrification, you're catering to mural artists from out of town. Man, that's, don't use the word. Call yourself a mural company, but don't dirty up our shit.
Right,
don't make our dangerous
mural
shit
company.
Safe.
Right, no, nobody calls himself a mural company because it's not marketable.
Right.
That's what it is.
But they sell the Street Art Alliance as someone who can put up a mural and coat it where it can be buff free.
Right. Then you can just go wash off all the dirty street art artists.
Right. Sure.
So I don't know. How do you feel about the gentrification of Portland? You think there's any hope?
So I don't know if you found this thread, but like so in 2007, I was the cover story on the Oregonian about this very topic.
Oh, I love this. So this is when I talk about gentrification, it has to do with artwork too.
Like, yeah,
I
feel like
artists are this nomadic being that get pushed around, and they're the force. They're like an ignorant force of gentrification. They just don't get it. They have this amazing power.
Right, and are ignorant, and you know, just don't see it coming, and all that. But yeah, so it was a weird. I don't know. I mean, you know, so it's personal. I mean. And I had kind of watched it, you know, because I moved here in the 90s when it was still, like, very economical. Very, you know, it was, like, some more single-family homes than any other U.S. city, you know, all that stuff. And just weirdly spread out and kind of slow and, you know, and there was jobs. So it was kind of a weird thing that to, like, witness that and then to be, like, oh, I see the trajectory. This is, like, on the opposite trajectory of Cleveland where, like, people are mass immigrating here, and then you know, but you don't. And then it was like, even when I got here, people were like, "Oh, it was better 10 years ago."
And that's how it is everywhere, though. Isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Is that it with old people though? Once the older you get, you're like, we added a lot. Our genes were better than your genes.
Right. Our genes lasted.
So now I have a tag that is that everything used to be better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I was thinking that on the way over here. I was thinking about, like, those fucking kids. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, man, I'm getting old and jaded. This is great. It's novel at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
As I'm entering the old and jaded phase of my life, it is novel. I wonder in 5 years, it will no longer be novel.
I mean, I mean it in, like, a facetious, like, making fun of the sentiment kind of way. Because I'm just like, everybody fucking says that about everything and nothing. You know? That it used to be better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, like whether it's a restaurant,
or the band. Yeah, right. Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. it's
and so you know, the like everything used to be better is like encapsulates. You know, it's like a stupid American attitude. You know,
the other one is it's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple. That's mm-hmm. a phrase that's driving me nuts. Like, I don't think anything is that simple when you really think about it. When you really think about it, it's not that simple. Mm-hmm. Even taking aspirin.
Right.
Aspirin's not a simple thing.
No.
It's very complex.
Doing stuff, all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so that, you know, it was the whole thing, you know, it was just, I don't know. I guess I like had a deep, bitter moment. And then we just have an office in this community center on, like, that's actually, like, kind of right by where our place is now. It was, like, 5 blocks away. And, you know, I really liked that place. It, like, really felt very Midwest to me. It felt like a church basement kind of thing, like VFW hall, you know. And there's just not very much of that here. But we just outgrew it, and then we didn't really have anywhere to go. And, you know, and then it's like, look around. You know, and it's like, the problem is that, like, we're successful, and so we're growing, and we need somewhere to warehouse and somewhere to put people and books and all this stuff. And I just kind of ran into this wall where there was nothing, you know? And it was... And I had a bitter moment. Oh, and then they were they got permits to build a 10-story building, and it was never built because of the crash. But on Mississippi and Fremont, they were going to build 10 stories that would have, like, cast a literal shadow over the grade school there. And that was kind of, like, the last straw for me, where I was like, so literally the kids will be in darkness so you can have these luxury condos, you know? It's just like, this is America, you know?
And that's America's poetry right there.
Uh-huh. And so that was kind of, and I had a period of really hating Portland. And, you know, and it was like there was stuff going on in my own life that was just kind of, you know, everything was, like, kind of wretched at that time, like, across the board. And I don't know. It was a weird thing. And, you know, and so I kind of lashed out pretty hard at gentrification. And they put me, you'll love this, they put my picture on the front page of the Oregonian with the headline, "Creatives Priced Out, Who Will Keep Portland Weird?" As if I single-handedly kept Portland weird. And then it was super awkward, because then everywhere I would go, people would be like, "Oh, you Joe. Oh yeah, I saw that," you know. And it was like the weird thing, because it's like I had said some, I wouldn't call it controversial, but it was like the lightning rod of the issue at the time. And so everybody wanted to have an opinion where they're like, oh, it's not that bad. It's not going in that direction. It's not actually going to happen, you know. But so everybody kind of wanted to debate me about it when I was just like trying to get a tea or something.
I do know that exact situation.
And so then I like, I mean, it was a little paranoid, but I started paying in cash and like wearing sunglasses and like doing all, you know.
I know exactly what you mean. I was on the cover of the Chicago Reader.
Yeah.
And I had real long hair like this and I shaved my head.
Right.
Because
right.
I couldn't handle it. I was like, yeah, too much. I couldn't go get a fucking taco.
Right.
Without harassment, whatever it was. Even nice talk was too much.
Right. You know? And it's that thing where you just don't, you know, you want to like live your life and be private. I mean, and then that was kind of the thing where I was like, how terrible must it be to be an actually famous person? Like, I must be so miserable.
Right.
You know, because then everybody wants something from you and thinks they can cannibalize your time.
And then I was thinking about this, like when I was reading it, like in my culture, like underground, metalhead, hip hop, mm-hmm. like the underground arts, these hip-hop artists, a couple of them died, and they were 48 and 40, something like that, and there was, like, three in a row, and the hip-hop community was talking about, man, we don't live past 50. We don't live past 50. I'm like, metalheads don't either.
Right.
Underground artists don't. Like, I'm 50 this year. I'm like, man, this right. could be, this is, I'm at the end.
Right, Joe Strummer, right, 51.
Right, so all of us are right there. I forget what I was saying now, because I started thinking about my death. It's like...
Well, let's hope you don't die next year.
Yeah, what the hell were we talking about, Joe?
You're going to power through your death. That's what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
no, there's so much going on in this fucking park. Joe's really taking me out of my... there's my beautiful wife coming. That's great.
We'll put a blanket around you so you can't see nothing.
Well, I'm usually my place, my surroundings, but there's so much going on here. I'm like, what the hell was that? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So it's so much stimulation.
Yeah.
A bit for me. So
that's an autism thing.
I'm losing track of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
This is a great defense for you.
Mm-hmm.
Great way to keep me on my toes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What the hell were we talking about?
We were talking about gentrification in Portland.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's the thing where... So now I guess I see it as like my job is to like make Portland like hold on to that bit of like how things were and, you know, to some degree still are, but howdy.
Hello.
This is my wife, Amy.
Hello. Jill.
This nice is your, to meet one you. Of your publishers.
One of many, I'm assuming.
Nice to meet you. Wow, mm-hmm. What an honor to meet you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. We're still doing this, so.
Okay.
Yeah, please. Glad to see you, baby.
Glad to see you. Hi, little dog.
Glucose service animal.
Oh.
Well, yeah, she's not wearing her credentials right now, but she does have a uniform. But she's kind of, this kind of ending. Her work day normally ends at 5.
Mm.
So she's...
We were talking about gentrification, the street. So what do you think about the idea that the mural projects around town and stuff like that, and how, I guess, I'm not really looking for something negative as much as I'm negative about it, but I'm looking for something like how can the few surviving weirdos in Portland survive, get together? Right. What can encourage them to go, you don't need a street art alliance. You can start one on your own, kids.
Right.
And then you can, like, I've talked to somebody's like, we don't want to do that. We don't cater to tourists. I go, would you like to teach kids in an impoverished neighborhood how to do street art? And they go, yeah. I'm like, then why don't you start your own street art allegiance
mm-hmm.
or union and then go do that. Get the grants right. and go do that.
Mm-hmm.
So is there any way to get... to make something like that happen, Joe?
Yeah.
Is there any way to say, you don't need to work with the tools of gentrification? We can still... There's a little fight back here, and Portland's got the only little corner in America that has some counterculture that's trying to stay alive.
Right.
And I'm here now. I want to try to figure out how to...
Right.
...encourage...
Yeah.
...survival.
Right, I get you. Yeah, I mean, you know that mural on 20th and Belmont? Have you seen that?
Which one is it?
It's,
I can tell you about the photo. I can tell you visually what it is, but I don't know the area.
So it's like, it's about gentrification. It's okay. And it's like, I mean, it's like hyper parody. It's brilliant, you know, in short. So it's like, you know, there's like a person spraying and it's this vanishing spray. And then it's like, it shows like every different kind of marginalized person, you know, like depicted. And then there's like a Nag Champa pictured, and it says like what goes around comes around.
Is there a Trump in there?
No.
Smoking a joint?
Wait, I think I have a photo for you. How about that?
Oh, great. That's what I need.
I took one because
like pink?
Every time I... Yeah, pink's my color.
Wow.
Every time...
One of my favorite colors too, Joe.
Every time
I had a pink and white bike, I picked it pink and I said, why pick a pink? Well, no one will steal it, but I like the color too.
So. Right, doesn't hurt. Yeah, the... Sorry, it's a little back. Yeah, every time I tell someone about it, they're like, send me a photo. And then I was like, okay, well, I need to go take a photo. So I did. I think I posted it.
So, Joe, is there a difference between street art and underground art?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I guess street art is in the street. And then, you know, like you could have underground art that's like in a zine or in, you know, like you could make a paper. But yeah, that.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Okay.
And then there's like.
Yeah.
It's so good. This is so good. And then there, yeah, and then that's like the other end of it.
But I've seen it.
But it's like so incendiary that I'm like, how did they get away with this? You know, because it's like totally making fun of that whole thing you're talking about where they're just like, yeah, rich people coming in, pushing out. And they're, you know, and they're like, this is you looking at this mural right now. Like, you are those people that are doing that. And I, you know, and it, so I just wonder how the hell they got away with it.
Right, exactly. You know? How did they get away with it?
And then the whole thing is called, I think it's called like Portland is Vanishing. Is the, you know, so it's and it's like so in your face that I'm like, you could miss it. Like you really could. Because there's not like.
I guess that's how they got away with it.
Right. You could be like, oh, they're honoring the homeless.
It's all those penis noses in Disney films. The same thing.
Right, yeah.
The cleverness of the artist.
There's nobody coming through like frame by frame to be like, oh, did anything slip in? But that's.
But what were you saying about underground art and street art being different?
So I mean, I don't know. I didn't really find. I mean, they had, they had both obviously in Cleveland, and
but present day they've evolved.
Yeah, but you know, it was like I guess my thing is like especially like in the 80s and probably in the 70s, though I wasn't paying as close of attention. I was a wee lad. They had lots of graffiti and stuff, but there wasn't like, you know, you just didn't get these like mural pieces or throw up pieces or whatever, you know, and it was like it wasn't even like, you know, I mean, hobo graffiti is like an art form, a fine art form, let's say.
I think so,
you know, and so but even that, like, you know, I didn't really see that until I went to San Francisco for the first time, and then I was like, you know, it's like the thing where people like put their ass into it and like go out overnight and like make something that is like a formidable force, you know, like they had been like it was a commissioned piece or something. And I guess, you know, that, but then, yeah, it's like you say, it's like at some point that became like a moneyed gig where you could get a gallery job and do that. And so, you know, I'd say it's like the, you know, I think of it like this. It's like, people always ask me to define a zine because, like, that's something I did for a long time.
Yep.
And so, a zine?
I'm joking. I did zines back in the day.
Clever. I think that really comes down to, like, the intention of the work, you know? It's like, and so it's a zine if you're like...
Yes! I'm sorry, I'm talking to you. Yes, intent.
Mm-hmm. And so it's like, if your goal is to, like, meet like-minded people and, like, hang out with people that you're, like, that you can grow together with and be in a community or a partnership with, you know, like that is artistic intent, you know? But if your goal is to like get a design job or do gallery
work. Vow of poverty.
Well, I don't know.
That's another thing for the artist. I think when you are obsessed with your art, there's intent and there's also the vow of poverty. Not that you vow to be broke, but you are in it whether you make money or
not. Yeah, that's what I was
saying. That's what I mean. It's not the vow of poverty. Yeah. It's the vow of, I don't know if I'll ever make any money or have hot water again in my life.
It ain't about
but
that.
But I'm doing this.
Yeah, and so that's how I see it, too, where I'm like, there's plenty of people that are very pure of intent, but, like, the right place, right time. You know, and so it catches on, and people are like, yes, I will write the check, you know?
Right.
But there's all, you know, but for them, but those people would be doing it regardless of paycheck.
Right.
You know?
That's what I'm saying. You do it regardless of paycheck. It's that, what I call vow of poverty. I know it's a provocative statement. It's not, because there's no artist that's going to say, you look like, yeah, I'm going to take all the money and spend it on coffee and weed.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like Swoon, I think, is a good example where, like, you know, she's a street artist,
okay,
and she's become very successful. I mean, she gives talks at colleges and stuff.
Cool.
But it's not a product of chasing that carrot. It's a product of people were like, your shit is really weird, your shit is really good, please come do it over here.
But that is so rare.
Yeah.
That is so rare that anyone from the street... Well, see, when I hear the word street art, I don't think it's art that's on street.
Right.
I think it's from people, like when they say fill the streets, it's called,
right,
it's like
mentality.
It's a workers thing.
Yeah.
The streets, we're on the streets. They're in the business, they're in the buildings, they're in the brick, you know, they're in the castles.
Yeah.
We're on the street.
Right.
So
yeah.
I see it as like that. Like it's a, we got to fill the streets. It's you know, where do you buy your candles? On the street.
Mm-hmm. Right. Know? Yeah, and I mean, it's a mentality. It's like where you come from, you know, and I feel like if you lived in a nice, like, posh New Jersey suburb,
yeah,
or whatever, like, it would be very hard to get in the mindset of expressing yourself that way because it wouldn't be in you and you wouldn't have, like, lived the kind of experiences that make that relatable.
Unless, are you talking about street art?
Yeah.
Right. Unless you're that guy from New Jersey who's like, wow, if I play street art for a bit, that gallery's going to hook me up because it's going to go on my CV.
Right.
I was a street artist. I did this mural. It's going to look good in my portfolio.
Right.
And that's what I see a lot around Portland. Like, there's these fine,
yeah,
artists that are playing street,
yeah,
art to get some coin.
Right.
And I don't necessarily... I don't begrudge people that kind of stuff. I guess I do. I just hate this whole system. I hate the capitalist system. I hate it.
Right.
I can't figure out anything beyond it.
Sure. Well, you know, you do and you don't. You know, I mean, maybe that's not your gig.
Yeah, it's not my gig, but I just don't... I don't like it. I don't like 5 days for two and all that stuff. But
right.
Yeah.
But so, you know, so I think that's the difference. Is like, you can be a street artist and, like, get acclaim, and people can, like, know your work, and you can get a paycheck. But you can't really be an underground artist like that, you know? Like, that's kind of the thing where, like, there's a line. Anyway, I mean, I guess it's like...
You can't be an underground artist and make money?
No, that's not what I said.
Oh, I thought that's what you were saying. So
No, it's like, I think that's about notoriety, you know? Or, like, you know, you could be infamous, but you couldn't be famous.
As an underground artist.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not... Oh, I love that you said that, because I feel the same way when I'm talking... Like, it's rare that an underground artist will make big coin.
Right.
And usually underground, when I say the difference between street art and underground art is legit illegal.
Right,
like,
yeah,
we're putting out stuff that we didn't know was illegal when we put it out, but society looks at it and goes, burn that book.
Right.
Destroy that publication.
Well, I feel like street art
and
should be in the street, should be illegal, though I guess...
It should be legal. They should have free walls, right?
No, I mean, I would think of it as being always illegal.
Illegal.
Yeah, yeah.
Street art.
I mean, not that it should be, like, ethically or morally or whatever, but I would think of it as being always illegal in practice.
Illegal, yeah. But see, I'm talking about, like, that act was illegal, but not the art.
Sure,
I'm talking about the art is illegal. The expression,
the substance.
Underground artwork, is, the expression is illegal. Not the act of publishing it.
Right.
But the act of to draw that picture, you're going to jail.
Yeah.
That's the kind of artwork I love.
Yeah, I guess so. And it's
and that's how I see undergrounds. And then you know, the underground and brutal artwork like that stays there. It usually doesn't bubble up. To like the movie Precious was one of the first movies I saw. I was like, oh, that was good and real.
Right.
And I feel it. That's my life. I feel it.
Right.
I'm glad that was made. I hope it hurt everyone that saw it. I hope y'all cried.
Right,
you just don't know.
And I guess it's like, I had a friend of a friend once that I was hanging out with, and she would get really upset when I would, like, put up stickers in public or, like, tag in public.
Why?
Like, really upset. Like, because I think there was an abomination to, like, the wealth that she had grown up in, and that I was, like, in her view, destroying and uglifying the city.
Oh, that's funny. In the Jade District, when they came to our house, I said, you know, a couple things I'd like is don't move the prostitutes out of the neighborhood. Find them jobs or find them health care. And leave the graffiti, leave the street, or clean it. And they're like, well, it's public property. We're cleaning it. And I'm like, yeah, right, it's public property. And they're like, right, we're cleaning it. And, you know, we're putting that in. I'm like, but the people putting those tags on there are public.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve to use the public property too.
Right.
So I can see that you want to keep your street gutters clean, and I can see you want to keep your buildings not marked, but the public property is mine too. Why can't I put my name on it?
Right.
I paid for it.
Right.
And so that's how I feel about with the Jade District. You know, I wish they'd do a free wall, or anyone around here, some free walls like that. You have something to say to me?
You have this look on your face like I might be doing something wrong.
No, no, I'm just reading listening. Wrong?
Okay.
No.
I took it as contemplative.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, just thinking about what you're talking about.
Brain training.
Brain training. I do need that brain training. We're talking about Asperger's earlier. And
they have a cognitive thing where they like teach you what to look for because you can't read emotions, but you can like read mannerisms.
He basically said, he said this though, later on in the conversation, he goes, you either decide you want to go live in the woods or you want to get along with people, so you take the brain training. And I'm like, I want the brain training because people are about to push me into the woods. I keep trying and reapproaching things. I'm going in like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? I'm like, I'm not a monster!
Right, right.
I am not!
You're like, you seem angry. And you're like, I'm not angry!
I'm not fucking angry! Your tone. What fucking tone?
Shane's been threatening to move to the into the woods for like 2 years now.
I keep telling him like three, four. I'm like, well, that was suicidal stuff.
It's a terrible place for street art, though.
Well, that's what I said. I said, well, I feel like I have nowhere. I kind of just walk into the woods.
Yeah.
Just walk into the woods. I want to disappear.
Right. I've been there. Yeah.
Because you just don't. It's
right. You don't fit in. None. Yeah.
And you're trying to have a friendly conversation, and people are taking the wrong way. Anyway, Joe, when I do this group thing with some of the street artists, would you come by and talk?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cool, because I want to do the group thing, but I wanted to sit with you first and talk to you. Uh-huh. It was important to, for me to talk with you. And I think I've stolen enough of your time today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
anything else you have to say about what I'm manically trying to talk about?
So if there's other autistic people out there, I have two publications that you should submit to. One is called Don't Be Retarded. Well, we're actually going to change it to Proud to Be Retarded, because that's a little... The other one was, it's like a complicated reference to like a cultural point in the 70s that people weren't getting. They just thought I was being insensitive. And then the other one is called Your Neurodiverse Friend. And that one is like advice for people that are not autistic. But, and the former one is like a kind of echo chamber for autistic people. But those are underground art publications that will probably not be accepted into the mainstream anytime soon. And they both, yeah, and it's like, that's kind of my personal work right now. And then it's also because it's like, I got so many people that had amazing stories, and I was like, you gotta write that amazing story, because that's...
And amazing stories?
No, they got an amazing story, like, they lived an amazing story.
Oh.
And so I was like, we gotta tell other people that story, and not just from me telling it one at a time, like, you gotta write that story.
Yeah.
You know, and then a lot of them were like, I don't know, and I was like, I'll teach you how to write, it'll be fine.
Hey, Joe, can I bring you a book we did?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't bring it by your store. Mm-hmm. Do you work at the store?
I don't normally, but awesome. But you know how to find me.
I do.
You
I'm
found
take
me.
A picture with you.
I was gonna take a picture of the two of you.
We're gonna do this one here, okay. Joe. You can take a picture all you want. Please.
All right, excellent. What's your dog's name?
Ruby.
Ruby.
She's normally the star of the photos.
I bet. They always are, right?
Good. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, yeah. Joe, thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Do you have... So these are some underground publications. I don't know if you're hip to this stuff, but do you have these?
No.
So this is like the book version, and this is the comic version.
Oh, kick ass.
And then this is the board game about personal growth.
Right on. Yeah, thanks, dude. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Is this signed?
No.
Could you sign it for me, please?
My only pen is red. Do you have another pen?
I don't know.
I have a pen.
You can tell what I use a pen for.
Yeah, well...
It's the funniest when I only have, like, a silver Sharpie or something. I can't write on paper.
As a public... Like, so it's funny to be a publisher. So are you able to spell properly and everything? You just...
I mean, no. I have people that do that.
Right. I'm a publisher that doesn't know how to spell... Right. That's what I'm saying. Like... As a publisher, I couldn't, like, almost all of the Michael Hunt publishing stuff has typos. Almost every single thing we ever put out.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
my staple now.
You'll love this.
There,
right.
What's
that?
One.
I didn't know any, you know, I didn't have, like, I slept through English class when it was happening, and so I had no education. And so I would literally get the book from the author and just immediately send it to the printer. Like, I wouldn't... It never even occurred to me to, like, proofread it or edit it, you know. So it was, like, years later that I was, like... Other people would come in and be like, let me edit your books. And I was like, if you want to, you know. And then they got it together, you know. And now, I mean, I'm being a little over the top. Like, I understand there's a value in this, you know. But then I'm also like, it's classist shit, you know, where you're just like, you get what it means. you know, like most people can decipher from the context in most cases, you know. And so that, but that's my favorite thing when we get a review and it's like, they use this adjective when I think they really meant this other one. I'd be like, you're kidding me.
We used to do a monthly paper in Chicago many, many years ago. And there were other monthly papers. And so one of them, I think that we had maybe taken a lot of their advertisers. They did a spoof of all the other monthlies. And the thing that they spoofed us on was typos. I'm like, great. If that's all you got, you know,
right,
who
right.
cares?
And it's just like the lowest blow where you're like, that's your criticism,
well,
huh?
Growing up, I wouldn't stop. I did my zines, and it was like everyone was like basically telling me, like I started 16, 17, living in a car.
Right.
And people always, like I put this stuff out, and like it's full of typos. Like I didn't have the right to write. I didn't have the uh-huh. right to put anything out unless I knew how to spell.
Right.
And I'm like, you know, that doesn't really make sense to me. I have to say these things, right?
Yeah,
I have to get
this
stuff out there.
Well, it's weird because, I mean, especially in today's world, like I've been reading this book from Alejandro Jodorowsky, and I'm halfway through the book. I've had like 8 typos I've
sure.
seen. It's not keeping me from enjoying the book.
Right.
I
right.
read through them. I go, eh.
Right.
You know.
You're like, that's odd. But it's also like people are just slashing budgets now, too.
Right. There are no more copywriters. There are no more proofreaders. Those things don't exist anymore. I see typos in the New York Times.
Oh, give me a break. They've got robots writing blogs now.
I see typos all the time. Yeah, robots.
Robot writers. It's amazing.
Right.
Well, not amazing.
It's funny.
It's great. That's the word to put on anything that's shit. That's really great. Because that's what I'm like. That is really great. Because I don't use that word at home. I'm like, oh, Amy, you're so great. You're spectacular.
Terrific.
Terrific.
Mm-hmm. We've had to adopt new adjectives.
Oh, right. You've made them derogatory. Yeah.
I guess we have. I'd like to think someone else has.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Right. You recognized it. They did it. But yeah. I know. It's I'm glad you understand.
Great meeting you.
Yeah,
you do
yeah.
hugs?
Yeah.
Good meeting. Thank mm-hmm. you very much for your advice on the...
brain training.
Oh yeah, yeah. They call it.
I was gonna say mental toughness. So I was gonna try to riff off of some stupid
so
movie.
Cute.
But
yeah, you have thick skin. That's my real tip.
What is it?
Have thick skin. That's the pro tip. Because that's the one thing that you know you can only learn from suffering.
Thick. You know what? But don't you suffer? Can you suffer? I think I have suffered so much. I have a thin skin now.
Really?
I have had such a thick skin to stuff, and now the slightest thing will. Really upset me.
You've
really?
Never had a thick skin.
I have
mister.
Never had a thick skin.
Oh.
No.
But it's gotten thinner.
Professional opinion.
Isn't it very thin now? It must be transparent.
Mm.
I may be no skin anymore then if I've always had a thin skin.
You're down to organs. That's
I remember when you and Jim Goad had that giant argument, and that was one thing you said. You say these vile things, but if someone says one thing that's insensitive to you, you're totally offended.
That's what Jim Goad said. Well, he's a jerk.
So you're not in touch anymore. I was
thinking. I go. I have most everyone I work with. It just it turns out to be enemies.
With Art Drop Radio. Drop Radio.